Hello and welcome to Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. This week, we look at how education can keep people out of prison and about education in prison. To help us to do this, I'm joined by John Lonergan. John Lonergan is a native of Banshee, County Tipperary. He served in the Irish Prison Service for over 42 years, spending over 22 years as governor of Mountjoy Prison and 4 years as governor of the top security prison at Portlaoise. He is currently featuring in a documentary TV series on RTE titled John Lonergan's Circus. It's about a group of Dublin teenagers from disadvantaged areas who train with a circus. But I wanted to find out about the relationship between education and entering prison. So I first asked John Lonergan to tell me what we know about the education level of those who enter prisons in Ireland.
The first comment I'd make, I think, is that the amount of research that's available in relation to such issues as the education background of people in prison and from deprived backgrounds is very, very limited. But the pieces we have, in fact, the last decent piece of research that was done to cover this whole subject in the whole area of education was published in 1997, 16 years ago. And I'm sure that's outdated now, but it did highlight that only 6%, between 6 and 7% of prisoners had stayed on at school after 16 years of age. That's a phenomenal high figure. And 57% had gone out of education by 15. And I know from my own experience, because I have a lot of ongoing contact with socially deprived areas, particularly urban areas, that the level of school leaving is still hugely significant, and many children who struggle in our second level education system drop out of education, or as an education welfare officer said to me at one stage last year, they fade out of second level education, and many of them finish their what would be called their formal education with very, very low standards of literacy and numeracy, and therefore they're inhibited and restricted in their for lifelong for the duration of their life, because they just simply don't have the knowledge, and they don't know how to acquire the knowledge, and they don't have the skills, so they have nothing going for them in terms of employment, and inevitably many of them are attracted to things like drugs and alcohol, criminality, and eventually prison. So and they all come from the same areas with the same type of backgrounds, but they are at the very core. You find education, and I'm convinced now for the last 25 or 30 years that education is actually the pathway out of social disadvantage, and it is the best preventative measure. Obviously it's not the only thing, because you do still have people who are well educated who end up in criminality, but I mean the predominantly the issue that's missing is education, and it is definitely the best pathway for young people who are caught in that trap generation after generation to break the cycle and to get out of their difficulties is through education.
And is schooling or the absence of schooling related to any particular type of crime?
It's related to this that the huge numbers of people come from the very same social backgrounds, and this has not changed over decades. You can pick out in Dublin six small little areas within six separate postal districts provide 75% of all Dublin-born prisoners. So you look at Dublin City with over 1 million people in it, you pick out six tiny little spots scattered around Dublin City, and 75% of all people who end up in prison with Dublin-born addresses come from those little six areas. So that in itself speaks volumes. It just simply says that you're in these areas straight away. The red light is flashing from the day the child is born. The culture is so negative and destructive. Families struggle, whatever type of families they are, because sometimes the families are themselves completely disrupted and non-functional. And so we know it's all part and parcel of, I suppose, the package, as I call it. And education is also absent. So you have high unemployment, huge levels of social and family disruption and difficulties, and you have a lack of education or an absence of education, especially at second level, and no third level. So you can see the gaps are there from a very early stage, and then they continue, because if you don't see it yourself in your family, if you are and worse still in your community, then there's a very, very small chance that you'll ever make it at all. You'll never believe in yourself. And actually, Sean, one of the things that I'm involved in a project at the moment that involves 8 young people from different parts of Dublin, all with major difficulties, and we're using Belfast Community Circus as the sort of catalyst or the facility to develop them. But one of the things that I didn't realise at all until I got involved in this particular project over the last 12 weeks is that the lack of vocabulary is such a massive, massive handicap. And many of the young people just don't have the vocabulary to express themselves, to discuss, to participate in debate, to be involved in group discussion. They just don't have the vocabulary. And as a result of that, they come across as aggressive. They use foul language because that's the only language they know. And that creates a barrier immediately. So, and then, of course, they have no confidence. And that confidence heaped on top of lack of vocabulary makes them almost, it makes it impossible for them almost to progress in life and to have any worthwhile objectives at all. So what have they? No objectives at all. Only I'll give the rest of my time on social welfare. When you hear 14, 15-year-olds saying that, then you say, why, my God, this is sad. One of my biggest criticisms of our education system is that it's obsessed with academia. It's all about academic subjects. It's all about points. It's all, especially second level. I mean, I differentiate completely between our primary system and our second level system. I think our primary system has got it fairly right and it's going in the right direction. It's experiential, it's relaxed, it's happy. It's the relationship between the teacher and the child is, from my observations last year when I was visiting a number of primary schools, is absolutely excellent. The young teachers have a wonderful approach. And when I went into classrooms, what I found was you're happy children. And if you are happy, you have confidence. If you have confidence, you're learning. And it is about life skills learning and social learning as much as it is about academics learning. And I'm afraid the transition then from primary into secondary, where they immediately are confronted with this huge competition for and the pace of learning has to be at a certain level because the teacher has to get through the curriculum and it doesn't matter. That's what has to be achieved. And the ones that are weak, the ones that are slow, just simply can't go the pace. If they can't go the pace, well, then they're losing out. And when they're losing out, they misbehave. They're looking for attention. They become disruptive, and then they're expelled. And then their lives are finished. And some teachers then, because they were disruptive, will continue to write negatively about them when they're asked for opinions or when they're asked for references, almost blocking them entirely from a second or third chance. And I mean, that's where I believe a lot of the difficulties are.
But isn't it hard to blame the teachers? Because you've even said yourself that you are challenged by them and, you know, you don't have a broader responsibility maybe of trying to educate other children alongside them. And, you know, you can see from a teacher's point of view that it could be very frustrating to be trying to work with such children in a classroom.
Well, no, there's no such thing as blame at all. I'm not blaming teachers at all because, I totally understand. And by the way, so do the young people because I've spoken to hundreds of them in the last few years. And not one of them really blamed the teacher except for the personal relationship. Most of them said it's not the teacher because the teacher has to go the pace of the curriculum. They have to try to get through the curriculum. They couldn't be spending time with me. Many of them said that to me. They understand that. And it's not nothing, except, of course, that some teachers, now we have to be fair, some teachers, just don't have that gift as well, and their attitude is very negative towards children. But some of the great teachers have also struggled simply because they, as you know, everybody realises they don't have the time, they don't have the opportunity to do it. But my criticism is of the system rather than the individuals who are trying it. And I'm also critical of those in authority, like principals, who write horrible stuff about children that have failed. Certainly, it's all right to tell the truth about them. You have to tell the truth about them, but you don't have to blacken them for the rest of their life. And I believe every child deserves a second and third chance, and that's it. I don't care what they have done in the past, provided they're prepared to make an effort again. I believe they deserve a second and third chance, like all of us as adults deserve and need a second and third chance in our lives. So it's no big deal for me at all to say to somebody, you failed in my school, but listen, the best of luck if you can get another school. And I believe that should be at the very basis of what we do. Children grow up they mature in the 12 weeks that I'm working with these young people already. It's obvious that they have matured. They are different children today, and I'm different. And that's what I mean by education. We learn from one another. The teacher must learn, and the student learns. And indeed, the teacher should probably learn more. And it is about learning and how to get the best out of them and what you have to do to get the best out of them. At the end of the day, for me, the teacher that brings through a struggler and gets a pass in a leaving cert subject after 6 years, that's the great teacher for me. Not the teachers that are throwing out A-plus students because they nearly educate themselves. The wonderful teachers are the ones who stay the course with the struggler, support, encourage, cajole, and eventually get that young person over the line. That teacher or those teachers, their work is immeasurable.
When you say, John, that the children who are at greatest risk of entering prison are generally confined to about maybe six areas around Dublin, in the Dublin area, that sounds like a problem that should be relatively well contained and relatively easy to tackle. Why haven't we been able to tackle it through the education system, at least? I mean, obviously it's not the only thing, but why haven't we been able to do better through our education system to date?
It's amazing, and that's just Dublin, and it's the very same is true to in every urban area in Ireland and small town even. You can pick out the streets or the roads or the areas where you have a disadvantaged area where, nobody else lives. Everyone tries to get out of it that have any ambition at all, and you're left with the sort of the strugglers that are whatever they are, the poor often, the poverty as well, there's a huge element of poverty in it. Why haven't we tackled it? We just don't have the will. Michael McDougall a few years ago said we need poverty to motivate people, and he actually made that statement as a minister. We need poverty. Poverty is no bad thing because it motivates, people. That wouldn't be confined to people like Michael McDougall. A lot of people would believe the same thing. We have a social class, status in Ireland that's very evident. When you go into visit any town and city, you know where the rich are and you know where the poor are. And so in our our society, it starts with housing, Sean. We house people in alienation. We house people and alienate them. And we don't provide the resources. I've often contrasted myself. I live in South Dublin, close to Kilmacud, in the Stillorgan area. And I look around that area and I see every facility that you could dream of. Swimming pools, great educational level, second level, primary level, universities, shopping centres, housing, amenities. You look at it, everything is there for kids. And those kids, the parents are still looking for more and more for them. And you contrast that to areas of Dublin, like parts of Finglas, or Ballymun, or some of the areas that I'm talking to, the inner city, south and north, and they have absolutely nothing. They have a cowshed for, as a health centre. They have ran down schools. They have a total lack of sporting amenities and facilities. But still, the children that are born into those areas are expected to compete with the children out here in South Dublin. So, and indeed, in other parts, not just South Dublin, it's all over the country. And there's no way they'll ever be able to compete. And there's no will, I'm afraid, to tackle it in a meaningful way, because it is a long-term strategy. You cannot do it in a 2 or 3 year period. You're talking about changing culture, and you're talking about changing human behaviour. And anybody who has ever entered into that field will confirm that this is a slow process that will take time, and you have to stick with it, and you have to provide the resources. And so you're trying to change culture, and I'm certain that education plays a key central role in that. It's long term, it's slow, but you need a long term commitment to it. And I'm afraid the reality is, even at the present cutbacks, who do you think suffers the most at the present cutbacks? The poorest of the poor, whether that's in social welfare or education or community or whatever it is. So one 10 euro from the school in the poor area is the equivalent of 1,000 from a school in a well-off area. The reality is that the parents of the middle class and the upper classes will compensate for the lack of state funding because they have the resources. The difficulty is that the people in the poor areas just simply don't have the resources. And who suffers? The children suffer. And what happens in the long term? Society suffers. So it is in our interest. I've said in the past that every euro that is spent on building a prison and sustaining a prison, it should be compulsory to spend 10 euro in prevention outside, because we find the money to build prisons and to sustain them and to keep them going. And we forget, and it's as black and white as that, we forget that if we invested initially to prevent kids getting into trouble in the first place, then we wouldn't have to spend the money at all on prisons. And we are not able to measure the human misery and the cost in terms of victims of crime, in terms of the suffering of those who live in such areas and the suffering of the young people. So the human and social costs way outweigh the financial cost. So it's about vision, it's about long-term investment.
You mentioned a study that was conducted in 1997, which, as you say, is 16 years ago, and it sounds as if you think there should be more research done on this topic. What kind of questions do we need to ask, and what information do we need to improve the education system that can be preventative in terms of reducing criminal behaviour and keeping people out of prison?
Yeah, I mean, Sean, one of the frustrations for anybody, looking at any of this subject, whether it's journalists or academics or whoever it is, one of the biggest frustrations they're going to come across is the data isn't there. I don't have the data. Where is the data? And I'm afraid that that there's a massive shortage. Why do we need that? How can you plan? How can you have a strategy if you don't know what the problems are in the first place? We are brilliant at that. We are brilliant at responding and creating and going a direction. We don't know whether what we're responding to is where the real causes are. So we need to get out into those areas, and we've got to start looking at what is the reality, why is it the reality, and then we might be then in a position to start. We must talk to the people who are suffering. We're inclined to impose our solutions on top of them. Even in the project I'm involved in, I bet a lot of people will be absolutely frustrated, saying, why don't they just throw them out of it? Why are they bothered going out to this? Maybe collect them in the morning when they don't turn up. People just don't understand the culture. The culture, if a child is being, we know now and accept, I do anyway, accept that the first 3 or 4 years in a child's life is absolutely crucial, and it makes the biggest single difference one way or the other. And if the child is neglected or is shortchanged in that period, well, then their life is going to be shortchanged. And we do need to have a completely different attitude. You cannot impose change on people, but you can nurture it. And that's the difference. And that's what the teachers that are going into social disadvantaged areas, they need a completely different brief. We also need a more flexible second level education system that's flexible but inclusive. We cannot be putting people out of mainstream second level education and sending them off to other Garda diversion schemes or FOSS schemes or life centres or whatever. They are all doing fantastic jobs, youth reach projects. They should be all integrated into our second level system as an equal part of it. Because once you put them outside the mainstream, they're already stigmatised. And any achievements they have in there are looked down upon and are frowned upon. They're not classified as equal. And therefore, while I'm absolutely certain that in our second level education system, we need to be far more flexible in terms of the needs of the people and the needs of the young people, and try and have a facility and programmes to suit them. Why can't we have the youth reach approach, the FOSS approach, the life centre approach, the diversion scheme approach in our second level education? Why do we have to put children out of it, the mainstream education system, and put them into a youth reach, for instance? And this is no criticism of youth reach. There's fantastic people working in youth reach, but they should be included in the second level education system and be part of it. And the interchange between the different programmes should be totally easy, so you can spend the time in youth reach. When you overcome some difficulties, then you should be able to move back into second stream education. And there should be no stigmatisation of people. Where were you educated? We still have that, Sean, in this country. Where did you go to Trinity? Oh, well, I've got you fine. You must be really good. It should have nothing to do with it. Where you went to school, what level. It should be about your ability and what you've achieved.
How would you write the brief for a teacher, a young teacher or an older teacher who's teaching in a disadvantaged area?
I'd simply write one sentence would do. To be a great teacher in a social disadvantaged area, you must love children.
But that mightn't be enough.
No, it will, Sean. It will. I'm absolutely certain. You have no business going in there if you don't love children. Because what I have to ask you to think about what that means, that your concern, your total commitment is about the child, not about yourself, not about the system. That if you loved, as Jean Vanier, that wonderful Frenchman, said, the human being's most primal cry is to be loved. If you love children and you're a teacher in a disadvantaged area, you will make a difference. You will look after that child. You will develop that child. You will encourage that child. You will see and find the potential in that child, and you'll stick with that child through thick and thin, and you'll bring that child through. And there are some, in case people might think otherwise, there are some fantastic teachers teaching in social disadvantaged areas. They're heroes. They're never recognised. They're never mentioned. But I know from talking to young people, for me, it's about accepting the child as he is, and a total belief that every single child is unique and special, and every single child has potential. And our task and the teacher's task is to find that potential, nurture that potential, and by doing that, you'll change the whole life direction of that child.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. My guest this week is John Lonergan, former governor of Mountjoy Prison. Next, I asked John, for people who end up in prison, what kind of opportunities are available for them?
There's two things about education in prison that the public need to get a grasp on. The first thing is motivation. You cannot force education on people in prison, no more than you can force education on people on the outside. And the first requirement of a person going to prison is that they must want to be educated. They must want to take on education. The reality is, because their culture and the baggage they have, a lot of the great work that teachers do in prisons that's not recognised at all by the authorities as well as everybody else, is that they have to try to decommission all the baggage that's been there for years and years and years, all the hostility, all the antagonism that has been built up against education. And the teacher in the prison has to undo all that. And that may take a long time. And so what do we do in prison? The very same on the outside. How many is doing the Leaving Cert? How many is doing the Junior Cert? I say, I don't give a spit how many is doing the Junior Cert. I don't give a spit how many is doing the Leaving Cert. The most important thing is that we're beginning to instill in them a love and a recognition that education is something to be valued, that is a wonderful, positive thing. And sometimes the teacher has to do that over a frustratingly long period to break down all the barriers. And that's the first thing, is interest and motivation. And the second thing that's equally important is ability. Capacity. I call it capacity. If the person hasn't the capacity to be educated in the sense that we're talking about, this academic-driven, central sort of education system, well, then that education in prison isn't going to work. What I found in prison was, the amazing thing was, Sean, that the people who are already educated going into prison were the first people to jump into, to take on foreign languages, to take on computers, to take on open universities. Why? Because they recognised the value of education. They said, right, while I'm in prison now, I'll make the best use of it and I'll be educated. The poor old misfortunes that came in that were illiterate or semi-illiterate and were very weak, you wouldn't get them into the school by forcing them with a JCB, because they hated the whole thing. They had no motivation, they lacked confidence, they had no interest, they didn't see any value in it. But you see, people take a lot of the cultural and social education things for granted. That children, for instance, recognise the value of education. Some do, and some will compete all the way to be the tops, right through to doctorates. But there's thousands of children that have no insight at all into the value of education, the necessity of education. That comes from their culture. And the only way to change that is to change their attitude by demonstrating to them that education is a place where you can learn and relax and build confidence and benefit yourself as an individual. And this is why performance is so important. And it was the same in prison, because I introduced drama in prison, for instance. We had huge big drama projects for 20 years in prison. The reason for that was to give them an insight into what teamwork was like, what performing was like, to get them the thrill, to experience the thrill of performing. And that was the basis for moving them on to another level. Maybe you say, now maybe you could tackle your literacy, numeracy. Maybe you could learn computers now. And built on the confidence they had, so to, you know, already achieved through drama, that the creative arts, Sean, are something that I have always been an advocate in prison, because they're instant. They're also, for whatever reason, many people in prison are very creative, and the creativity is given an outlet. And once you begin to, you know, paint a picture and see your picture up on the wall, for some people that never ever had an achievement in their life, that picture could change their lives.
Given all that you said about the value of education for people in prison, is there a case for making it compulsory?
Oh God, there's no room for anything compulsory in anything in Irish society, in my view. I'm constantly saying to parents, listen, I talk a lot to parents, and based on my own experience as a parent and my own experience of being in Mountjoy, and I say to parents, listen, strive, put 95% of your energy into getting agreement and consent with your children from day one, and keep 5% for enforcement, because enforcement will end bad every time, because the first choice the child will get at whatever age, they'll reject the enforced bit. So pass on to the child a love of and a passion for whatever it is, learning, sport, whatever it is. That child will have that for the rest of their lives. They'll love it. They'll look back on it with absolutely wonderful excitement and wonderful happiness. Anything you enforce on people, they'll want to reject it the first chance they get, because that's what freedom is about, rejection of the things enforced upon us. And we felt that in our education. When I was going to school, everything was forced on us. I hated the whole system because of that. And I still hate it today on that. And that's why I'm all the time promoting this new approach. I mean, I was so impressed with the new philosophy in primary education. For me, that is the way to go. Nurture the child, have the child happy in the classroom. Forget about your enforcement. You cannot change behaviour by enforcement. You can increase antagonism and bitterness. What do you want? You want a person to be there by consent. You want a person to appreciate the value of education as a holistic thing, as a thing that will help them make a difference to their lives. It's something to enjoy. Education is something to enjoy. It's something to change your life. It's something and the more you're educated, what do you realise? The more you're educated, how little you know. That's the wonderful thing about education. That's the wonderful thing about getting old. It is, you begin to realise how little you know. Teachers are very unique, because they give, you know, they spend a huge amount of time accumulating knowledge and expertise and skill. For what? To share it with others. Sure, well, that's a fantastic vocation. That's a fantastic, generous way of living. And we, as a society, we totally undervalue the significance of the contribution of teachers to our society.
And that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, John Lonergan, whose TV programme, John Lonergan's Circus, is currently being screened on RTE television. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.